I'm Lillian Vasquez with Lifestyles on KVCR. Thanks for listening. April is National Autism Awareness Month, and in support of our KVCR Autism Initiative, we'll dedicate each week to a story about or related to autism. This month, we'll also talk with the Assistance League of San Bernardino to hear about the Hedris Ball event. Author Beverly Gray shares her insight about the movie The Graduate in her new book. So there's plenty to listen to in the coming weeks. But today on the show, my guest is Melissa Reiner, an autism expert. My conversation with Melissa is coming up on Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez, right after the news.
Support for Lifestyles on KVCR comes from Dr. Ingrid Trinkle in Redlands, providing medical and cosmetic dermatology, including PicoA laser treatments for tattoo removal. Information and a list of services online at clearmyink.com.
This is Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. Melissa Reiner is the founder of Bridging Pathways, which is an autism and behavior consultant company. She has a master's degree in special education and is a certified consultant in Relationship Development Intervention, or RDI, a one-to-one therapy companion that she used when she was working with children with Autism Spectrum Disorder, or ASD. So share what you consult on and your background with autism.
Sure. I began, like you said, working as a one-on-one therapeutic companion for students who had a diagnosis of autism and who were being immersed in what we call a neurotypical classroom setting. And I stumbled upon this one little amazing boy whose parents were having him also work with a relationship development intervention consultant. I accompanied him to a few of those sessions, and I fell in love. And I was blown away, and it was unlike anything I'd ever seen, and it felt revolutionary, and it was compelling because it wasn't just where we work with a child and then tell the parents, okay, this is what I did, and then you do it, which I think is often a great way to set a family up for failure. And instead, this program really works with the whole family, siblings, caregivers, extended family members, and both parents. And when everyone is on board and working together collaboratively towards the same goal, we see tremendous results in ways that prior we really hadn't.
Are you referring to RDI, to Relationship Development Intervention?
That was where my training was in Relationship Development Intervention. And it was really a tremendous shift because it wasn't sort of superimposing correct behavior in rote ways. It was instead really engaging a child to cultivate the desire from within to connect with others, which is a huge deficit. Sometimes families will say, I just want my child to talk if their child is apraxic or perseverates over something and only talks about that thing. And I said, well, you don't really just want your child to talk. You want to communicate effectively with your child, and that's different. One is, say thank you, and then a child says thank you, but do they know why?
Right.
Do they even know who they're thanking? Often, eye contact can be a big deficit as well, where there's an issue where sometimes, even if you're facing the person, there's not really a visual connection. I've watched a parent talk to their child about like really exciting things, their birthday party and who they're going to invite and what they're going to do. And I said, hang on a second, Mom. I don't know if you heard what your mom just said, I would say to the child. And he hadn't. They were inches from each other, facing one another. She had really explicitly, calmly, carefully, thoughtfully been talking to him. And he just sort of was focused inward at the time and was really unable to connect with her and engage in what felt like a meaningful and appropriate way. So once we stopped that forward momentum, and I could have just told him what to say, okay, see, thanks, Mom. But then we would have missed the whole opportunity that he really wasn't connecting in. And just by sort of shining a light on that moment in time and that experience, I said, wow, I really heard your mom talking about your birthday party, but I don't know if you heard her. And once he has cultivated that awareness, he's now interested in what his mom is saying. We don't have to force him to listen or make him listen. And that's the real difference.
So it's kind of different than the ABA applied behavior analysis where They're doing it very rote. Do this, do that, touch this, touch that. You're bringing meaningful conversation or thoughts expressed in a more meaningful way so that both sides are understanding.
Our whole world is completely dynamic and not discrete. So if we're learning how to connect with other human beings through a discrete means of communication, we're probably going to get it wrong. We're probably going to miss our mark. And if instead we're really engaged with other people because we have a desire to be engaged with others, then we can hang in there for those dynamic shifts in every interpersonal relationship. You know, it's totally unpredictable. I always give the example, if I showed a child a picture of a smiley face, and I said, now that means someone's happy. And then I show a picture of a sad face with tears, and I say, that means someone's sad. That's a really discreet approach. Had that child who learned that tears mean sadness,
you're saying there that tears can also represent happiness, not just sadness. And if they'd only seen the face with tears, they'd always think tears represent sadness.
Sad, and feel bad for someone who's experiencing awe and elation.
I'm speaking with Melissa Reiner on the topic of autism. Tell me, how do you describe autism?
There are a series of deficits, and if you meet certain criteria, and you qualify for the diagnosis, right? But I've worked with individuals who sort of graduate out of a diagnosis. So what is autism? I mean, there's a litany of deficits that individuals can have, but I've worked with 50 people all with an ASD as a diagnosis, but they're unique individuals, so they present differently. So one child was incredibly bright and very verbal. He socially was really challenged. His parents were divorcing, and so his behaviors were augmented, I think, by the tumult and strain of his family life. It was an acrimonious divorce. So he became violent and aggressive. And then I've worked with another child who struggles so much to attend to what's going on in his present moment, and he is an angel, and he is pure kindness, and he's just a loving sweetheart. He will kiss and hug his parents. If he writes a story, he just talks about how much he loves his family. And that's typically not seen as an attribute of someone who has a diagnosis of autism, right?
Right.
But he was completely loving and caring and thoughtful and careful about what gifts he got whom. And he was nothing. To answer your question, I don't know what the answer is, and so much as each child is so unique and presents so differently, and often we see challenges with reading social cues. We see challenges with perseveration. So we become, for anyone who doesn't know, it's sort of becoming hyper-focused on a self-interest or an interest that is only interesting perhaps to you. You know, you may speak ad nauseum to others about it without being aware of the fact that their eyes are glazing over and they're uninterested after a certain amount of time. And there are challenges with transitions for individuals, sometimes transitioning from one part of their day at school, for example, into another, or if there are changes in their routine. And for my work, because I work from a dynamic foundation of teaching and learning and growing for our children, I really focus on not avoiding what may be challenging to a child, but embracing it. So if I know the child I'm working with struggles with transitions, I'm going to create as many transitions as possible. If I know my child struggles with, if they make a mistake, if something, isn't exactly the way they planned, if they're drawing something and somehow there's a line that they didn't intend to, a mistake was made, how do we overcome that? So I want to make a million mistakes. I want to make hundreds of mistakes. So we begin, I don't want to avoid it.
Sure.
I don't want to tiptoe around not wanting to rock the boat. I want to rock the boat. I always say to families I work with, I'm not here to play necessarily, although we do, and I'm not here to make friends. And initially, often children say, I don't like it when Melissa comes over, but I have broad shoulders and I'm okay with that because I know in the long run, I'm really stretching everyone's fabric and helping build resilience, which is the number one factor for success in life. And it is a huge deficit for individuals with autism.
What do we know about autism today that we didn't know 10 years ago? And how far has science come?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think many, many years ago, decades ago, I think you had to be pretty profoundly impacted and have a severe presentation of deficits and challenges to even get a diagnosis. And so now people ask me, you know, why is it so prevalent? It's interesting because I think this year and last year, the rate has finally started, you know, the increase that we've been seeing has finally started to level off.
The one in 68.
And so the statistic is now sort of maybe finding a little bit of a level, an even level. And so I think that the rise was also because we were broadening the diagnosis. It wasn't necessarily that you had to be severely and profoundly impacted. People say, oh, you're high functioning. And I've heard people say, you know, so to say someone's low functioning may mean that you're overlooking their assets. And to say someone's high functioning may mean that you're overlooking their deficits.
Right.
And my specialty was working with children who were labeled as high functioning because in a way they would slip through the cracks because they looked like they were attending. They might get wonderful grades in school, but socially and emotionally, they were not fulfilled. You know, the parents knew, I want more for my child. I know they can have a fulfilling and meaningful series of relationships, friendships, in the future marriage, in careers. You know, we don't get jobs when we're grown because, you know, our CV, right? We may, but there are maybe 30, 50, or 100 other people who have the same qualifications because you connect with the person you're interviewing with. Something clicks, and that is not thought in a discrete way. That is completely dynamic, completely unpredictable, and it's that social and emotional connection that is of vital importance.
Let me just comment on the fact that you said your specialty is working with high functioning. And isn't that kind of, what's the right word? It's going to sound negative, and I don't mean it in a negative way, but isn't that kind of the putting you in a good spotlight that you get to work with the high functioning? So you need to fill in a few gaps as opposed to working with someone low functioning that still needs your same interest, you know, enthusiasm.
Yeah. Just to clarify, it is my specialty, but I work with all children of all abilities.
Oh, good.
We're looking at each individual's unique needs, deficits, and assets. I work with a lot of families who don't have a diagnosis, but they're just challenged with some behavioral issues.
Right.
I don't discriminate as so much as it doesn't matter. I'm working with that individual. I would say don't treat a diagnosis. I treat a child. That is my focus, is what does this child need? What is challenging this child? What hurdle is set before this child that we can help them overcome?
I'll continue my conversation with Melissa Reiner after the break. But now I want to remind you, our on-air pledge drive starts later this month. But why wait? Make your pledge now and be entered into the early bird drawing. Help us today. Support the station you rely on and love to listen to. Don't delay. Support today. You're listening to Lifestyles. I'm Lillian Vasquez. If you just joined us, we're talking about autism all this month on Lifestyles. My guest today is Melissa Reiner, who works with families and individuals living with autism. You have a degree in special education. Why did you choose autism within the special education field?
It clicks with me. I feel deeply connected to it. I feel like I understand it, and I understand individuals who have a diagnosis, and I feel like I have continued to see remarkable results. When I say I graduate families all the time, I am always in awe. And it's not me. I view myself as a vessel for which this information comes through. I mean, I work with families who are in complete crisis, ready to give up at their wit's end, at the end of the rope. And within a few sessions, I've heard, I have my child back. This was the first time we were ever to feel like we could go on vacation together as a family. For the first time, she is connecting with her sister. I am in awe. It's remarkable.
So do you go to the families or the families come to you?
I have a website called AskMelissaNow.com with one L and two S's. Families often come to me either through AskMelissaNow.com or through referrals from heads of school, directors, principals, and doctors. I work with the leading developmental pediatrician and pediatric neurologist in Orange County and LA County and Riverside and San Diego and Ventura County. I'm not a car salesman, and I'm not here to get people to do this. If someone wants to engage in this way, and it is parent-driven, the parents have to be on board. And I don't want to drag people along and try to make someone do something
right,
unless they're really eager and invested.
So you're doing this all via your website?
That is an avenue. I meet with people in their homes.
Okay.
And in the child's school environments as well.
So you've been doing this for a while. You seem to have a real understanding of the autistic mind. And obviously you've said you've graduated families. Does that mean they are no longer autistic, or they're living within their autism in a more typical manner?
That's another excellent question. I am not a diagnostician, so I can neither diagnose nor take away a diagnosis or graduate a child from their diagnosis. But I do know of families who have then seen their doctors and do no longer qualify. They have graduated from the diagnosis. However, in my work, I guess more importantly, I don't know if it matters if someone has, you know, no longer what they were once told is a diagnosis and isn't, or if within this diagnosis they live in a way that is more productive and effective and meaningful.
Which is really the most important part, regardless.
No, it doesn't really matter. To me, it doesn't matter.
What about the diagnosis of autism in today's world? Is frightening or is it not frightening?
I think what frightens me and what is a deep concern is I see parents struggle so hard to fight tooth and nail, spending every penny they have to fight for services for their children. My greatest fear and what scares me the most is that we really don't have a support system for those who are more profoundly impacted by autism. As we get older as parents and we're not with our children anymore, who will love them as much as we do? Who will care for them in the way that we do? It's one thing to have support in school, but as our children become adults, there are a lot of individuals who cannot successfully live on their own. And there is nothing in place. With our administration, I think that children are getting the short end of the stick and more resources are being pulled for children with special needs in particular.
Many times when we talk autism, we talk the children. And yet those children become high school, and then they age out, and there's nothing for them after they age out.
Yeah.
What do we talk about? What's the conversation about after high school?
Well, it's compelling, and it's something I've just started to sort of mull over in my brain while I'm sort of hatching a plan about how to take on the world with this. But I'm working with a man who's 26, and he was able to get certified as an x-ray technician and a dental hygienist.
Wow.
And he's amazing. But socially, he is highly challenged. Academically, again, he can apply himself, and what looks like on paper is that he's thriving. But no one wants to hire him because they're uncomfortable.
Right.
Because of maybe how he looks or how he acts or how he talks or his anxiety. And when anxiety strikes because we're afraid that people are looking at us differently or treating us differently or not giving us the time to process what they're saying. So I am endeavoring to go into the dentist that he wants to work with and have a conversation. Then we don't have the confusion, the frustration, the inevitable then firing of the person who's really doing their best.
Right.
All of these other people, the bosses, the people in charge of these offices, they are not equipped, and they can be really easily. This is the plan I'm hatching sort of in real time, but I'm interested in forming some sort of ability where, you know, staff development can be spent on taking a moment to help all individuals be successful.
I'm speaking with Melissa Reiner on the topic of autism. I have one more question, but I need to make this comment that many adults with autism have voiced their opinion that they don't need to be corrected or fixed. So I just want to express that I understand their point of view. But from a parent's point of view, I guess the parent is always trying to help the individual to be the best they can be. And I just know that when I've done stories on autism, there is a community out there that says, we're okay just the way we are. And so I just want to give that shout out. Okay, what can you share with our listeners that you feel is really vital and beneficial? And I have three categories. One would be for a parent who just got the diagnosis, for a parent who has a student that's aging out of the system, or the takeaway for the community that may not know anybody with autism.
So, not a tall order.
So. Yeah, not a tall order at all. So kind of for the new parent who has just received the diagnosis and, you know, or is driving around in the car and they hear this interview and they think there's something going on, but they're not sure.
Yeah.
What do you say to that parent?
I think it's really important to connect in with other parents who have experience, who have resources that can be shared. Why not make sure that we're connecting in to get as broad a scope of perspective on which is the doctor that might best serve my child? Who do I talk to about finding an occupational therapist, a physical therapist, an SLP, a speech and language pathologist? Who do I talk to about a playgroup? Who do I talk to about, you know, challenges with erratic behaviors or explosive behaviors? To connect in with other parents in the autism community is a really stabilizing and grounding place to start, because it can be terribly devastating to receive a diagnosis, even if you anticipated and maybe thought it would be.
But when you hear the words from the doctor, your son or daughter has autism.
Yes, yes. Right. And it can make you angry. It can make you sad. It can make you frustrated. It can make you feel helpless. And it can all be just from reaching out to a group. There are meetup groups and for parents and for grandparents, you know, bouncing ideas and thoughts and hearing other people's experiences.
What do you think for the high schooler that's aging out?
It's terribly challenging. If a child is not going to school, then it's that same sort of workplace conundrum, but it's also surmountable. It really is. If I go in and talk to the manager at the grocery store or the manager at the pharmacy, and we can have that conversation and we can educate and inspire other individuals to step forward, because I think people intrinsically are good and really want to know how to do it differently. They just don't know.
Right. And I think that segues into my third comment. Our question is on the takeaway for the community that may not know someone with autism at all. What role do they play?
It is about educating and disseminating information so that it becomes an approachable conversation. And I find that when you say that, you know, someone who doesn't know someone, most of the time, if I talk to someone who says that they've never known anyone, then they go, oh, I wonder if my nephew, or I wonder if my neighbor, so suddenly they go, oh, I wonder for my brother-in-law. And it's really compelling that suddenly it's just eye-opening to say, oh, I am surrounded by all kinds of different individuals.
You know, Melissa, I want to go back to the point that you said that, you know, somebody knows somebody either from church or their cousin or their niece or whatever.
Mm.
But I think maybe one of the population that doesn't know autism very well is law enforcement. Because I have heard on many occasions them say, what's autism? And they are sometimes the first responders. So I do agree with your point that you're going to, someone in their lifetime is going to know someone with autism now at this point, you know, with the numbers being 1 in 68. But I still don't know that the law enforcement knows autism. I mean, there may be officers, of course, in every department that has a child with autism. I'd be surprised to find one that didn't.
Yeah.
But I still think that population may not know as much.
Yeah, and it's funny because I bet there are plenty of police officers who have children or, like I said, a brother-in-law, someone, and they may still feel like they can't talk about it. Maybe they feel like it would, when law enforcement, when we're, you know, we're seeing sort of a sweeping broad stroke like that, I'm wondering if just because the dialogue hasn't begun. It hasn't even been ventured so that if nobody's talking about it because there isn't a forum in which to speak, that may be why. And it would be such a, like I said, such a simple conversation to start. That may be the issue.
Melissa, it's been great talking with you. Thank you so much for your input and for your passion for autism.
Thank you, Lillian. It's been an absolute pleasure.
That's our show. If you'd like to hear something again, go to our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. You'll also find all of my past shows, share a comment, or make a pledge while you're on our website. Thanks to all who helped to make this show possible, including David Fleming, Sharina Wad, Sean Houlihan, Roger Ashheim, and executive producer Rick Dulock. And thanks to Ethan Bortnick for our theme music. But most of all, thanks to you for listening. Join me next week at the same time for Lifestyles with Lillian Vasquez. Bye for now.
Support for Lifestyles on KVCR comes from Dr. Ingrid Trinkle in Redlands, providing medical and cosmetic dermatology, including PicoA laser treatments for tattoo removal. Information and a list of services online at clearmyinc.com.